Hey there, it's Antrice, and welcome to a new episode of the Savvy Painter Podcast. Things have been a little chaotic around here. We have moved back to Argentina, and it's taken some time to get my bearings. So we're living in a town called Carlos Paz, which is in the province of Córdoba. We're about a half hour outside of the city of Córdoba, which is the second largest city in the country after Buenos Aires. So we're a nice distance away from the chaos of the city, but we're close enough to pop in whenever we want to. And I've gotten some questions from some of you who are concerned about what it means for the podcast if I move back to Argentina. I am going to continue the podcast. No worries there. I'm not stopping now. This is so much fun. And actually, if you weren't aware of it, this is where the podcast started. I started the podcast right here in Carlos Paz in 2014. So it's kind of a homecoming. And I've just about got my new studio set up. So I'm super excited about it. It's working. I get to paint in it and all that. But there's always a little bit more that I want to tweak and build out. If you're curious about that, there are a couple photos on my Instagram account at Antrice Wood. You can see how I set it up. My husband, Koke, has been custom building most of the furniture in between setting up his own business, which makes it really exciting for me because I get things like a stand-up workstation that is perfect for my height and it's perfect for how I love to work. But the flip side of the coin is he's setting up his own business too, and so it takes him a little while to build everything, and I can be a little bit impatient sometimes. But he is my rock, and like most Argentinos I know, he is incredibly resourceful. So that's what's been happening on my end. Let's get to the podcast. This week, I am delighted to introduce you to Kristen Kronick. This was a super fun episode to make because Kristen is a longtime listener of the podcast. She's been tuning in since I started this adventure in 2014, so it kind of makes sense, I guess, that she would be the first person I interview here in Argentina again. Kristen is an artist working out of Jacksonville, Florida. She's also a member of my Growth Studio program, and she has a really interesting backstory, which she's going to tell you all about in just a minute. In this episode, Kristen talks about making major life decisions that enabled her to focus on her painting, learning to trust her instincts, and how that led to an exceptional body of work. Kristen managed to put together not one, but two full shows with a baby and a toddler in the house. So yes, that means she's got two shows running right now. So if you're in the Jacksonville area, you should definitely go see her paintings. All right, let's get this party started. Here is Kristen Kronick. Kristen, welcome to the Savvy Painter Podcast. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about how you started out as an artist. I always love to hear the backstory. What got you interested?
I started out probably as most artists do. As a child, I love to draw and paint and make things. I'm an only child, and that's what I spent a lot of my time doing. Was since I was by myself, I would just go up into my room and paint and draw for hours. My mom never changed the carpet that I painted all over as a kid because I thought it'd be fun for my kids one day to go up there and do the same thing, the one room in the entire house. So that's really where it started. And my aunt is an artist. Her name is Kathy Strauss. And she noticed early on that I was extremely intrigued by it. She told my parents that I was an artist and that they should watch out for that. And I think knowing that from a very early age really gave me permission to be excited about it. And that was such an encouraging thing to hear. And so I loved just visiting her and playing in her studio every time we would see her. And that really nurtured it from a very young age.
I actually love that your mom still has that room almost preserved on the carpet. I can imagine what that looks like.
Well, I used it just to wipe my brushes at first, and then it turned into other like sketches that would happen on the carpet.
Really?
Yeah. With like puff paint, because that's what I was using at the time. So.
Oh my God. I love that she let you do that. That's actually pretty rare. Like, I think most parents would probably freak out, or by this time would have changed the carpet.
She did freak out at first, but I mean, at that point, it was already done. So we're like, well, you might as well leave it and move on. So It usually is pretty messy. So I think it took her a few weeks to realize that there was actually paint on the carpet. But yeah, I remember that day when she found it. That was, I was in trouble, but it's okay. We're all better for it.
It's part of the family lore now. And when did you decide to focus on art?
I took a really winding path to get here. But I will say starting out, I knew that eventually I would come to this. It was just a matter of time, practically fulfilling needs, like financially and stability-wise. And also, I just have a lot of dreams and I'm kind of multifaceted. And so at one point into high school, one of my teachers, Mr. Chamberlain, he taught me actually only one class. It was actually photography of all things. He's a painter as well, but I got to know him and he was a Marine in Vietnam. And I remember being extremely inspired by the fact that he had done so many other things with his life and he was an artist and he taught in that. And also my aunt, she worked full time as a researcher. I'm going to butcher it, but she works right now in like medical research. And so, and she was able to work in studio time throughout all of that. And so I probably had so many influences, but those are the two I remember strongest because I had other things that I wanted to do. And it was inspiring to see artists in my life that were wonderfully accomplished artists and had done other things. I actually, out of high school, I was looking into art school and I really wanted to do it, develop my skills even more, but I felt called to join the Navy. And so I realized that I could continue to develop my skills, albeit slowly, but I couldn't do the Navy later. I had to do that now. And so when I was 18, I accepted an appointment to the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, and I graduated and served for 6 years active duty after that. And throughout all that time, I kind of worked in art in the nooks and crannies, sometimes more, sometimes less. I actually did a sketch during our boot camp. So I even did it then. It was very small, very short. So I just kind of worked it into the nooks and crannies when I could. And then there was just some pivotal moments during my active service time and towards the end that led me to here where I am now.
And what were some of those moments? Can you describe them?
Honestly, I found your podcast back in 2014. I had just gotten back from deployment, my first deployment, and I was really looking. I had some time finally to devote more to painting versus just here and there when I could. Like when we're at sea, there's absolutely no way. But when we're on shore, there's some opportunities. And so I remember I found it. And honestly, that was a huge part of it because I was hearing from artists and I started to identify with them more so than the things that I was doing in the Navy. And that was probably the spark where I was like, oh, like I actually could be this person. And, you know, maybe I don't have to wait till I retire. But I also, from those interviews, I was like, you know what? I definitely need to know my song well before I sing it. And I need to focus back on painting. And so I found a local artist that I really respected. His name is Paul Ladnier. Ladnier. I met him actually at like a garage sale. I was trying to get some frames and he was selling some out of his studio and I liked his work and he agreed to teach me. So I went to his studio in the evenings, lots of times when my husband was deployed because we were both active duty at the time. And that was a huge step because I think that's where it really elevated my work from the high school level into something that was semi-professional. He was an excellent teacher and I really, really, really value that time with him. But it's also where I learned in conjunction with this podcast that art is definitely a long game. It's not something that I need to perfect before I'm 30. And up to that point, I was pretty aggressive in pursuing any goal that I had. Probably that's a result of the military where you just don't have a lot of time and there's a lot of things you need to do. And I mean, I'm really glad I did it. I was painting every night after work and just studying as much as I could, which I still am glad I did. And I still do actually, but I didn't have that anxiety, that stress that I needed to be perfect and by a certain age or by a certain time. And so it kind of actually let me relax and which is probably not the outcome you're expecting, but actually after I painted with him for a few years, I actually decided to stay in the military because I realized like there's a lot of really practical things about this that are good. I do get some satisfaction out of it. I've honestly come this far. I actually had applied and gotten accepted to MIT for a master's in naval engineering, and it would be a full naval scholarship. And my plan was, I was pregnant at the time. My plan was to have the baby, go to dive school to become a salvage diver, go to MIT. Just, I had so many things I wanted to do.
I love it.
And it was awesome. I mean, it was so much fun. And then I had my daughter, and then everything changed.
Life has a way of throwing things at you. But I love this. I love that you were able to give yourself that gift of not feeling pressured and of, you know, really seeing that it is a long game, that it's a lifelong commitment. And yet you are very ambitious and dedicated. What I see is a very structured approach with realistic expectations.
Yeah. And at that point in my life, I had been able to do everything I wanted to do. Like I could do the Navy, I could paint. It was just my husband and I, and he supports it greatly, which I'm so appreciative of. But when I became a mom, I just realized that something had to go. Also, just the naval lifestyle wasn't really how I wanted to raise her. And so, but honestly, like, had I done that route, I don't think painting would have had a lot of place again for a while. Just it's a pretty intense couple of years, and that made me really sad. But I had already kind of just let go of it. I actually stopped listening to the podcast for a few months because I was like, it hurts too much to hear stories of artists because I don't, you know, made me sad. But no, when I had her, I just knew. And so when I got back from maternity leave, the day I got back, I submitted my resignation and told MIT no. And that was the hardest decision of my life, but I haven't regretted it for a second. But what that did, not only did it give us the lifestyle we wanted to raise our kids with, it also made painting a possibility.
That must have been a really intense decision though. Like, that's a huge one.
It was huge. There was so much we were saying no to by that. But you know, actually my grandfather, when he passed, the last thing he told me, he asked me about MIT. He knew I was deciding, and he goes like, don't give up free education, Kristen. And I did, but you know, it wasn't free. It did cost things in other ways. And that was just something that we valued more. I learned that with the Navy. There's no such thing as anything being free. You'll pay. It just may not be with money.
So tell me what happened next. So now you've turned down the MIT naval scholarship. You are having your first child.
Yeah.
Opening the doors, at least to the possibility of painting. What happened next?
So resigning from the Navy is a long process. I think it took like 8 or 9 months start to finish. That's just how it works. So it's not like you give a 2 weeks notice, then you're gone. And so during that time, I found a civilian job. I needed to kind of bridge the gap. It would be a phased process probably. And I wasn't sure how long it would take. But then right before I left the Navy, I found out I was pregnant for a second time. So I was probably 6 or 7 weeks pregnant. I got out of the Navy and then I had a job lined up. We had everything planned. We had saved. I mean, everything, like as you do. And then 3 days after I hung up the uniform, we flooded during Hurricane Irma. And literally every single plan went away with the flood, like the savings, the plans, the organized paperwork, everything. So that was a moment that resulted in utter chaos. But I think that was the defining moment.
Paint a picture of what that was like. So you have this one vision of how everything's going. And I can imagine. So for those of you listening, Kristen is very org, as you can imagine, very organized and very like specific about her actions and likes to plan things out and figure out the details and then go for it. So I'm so curious, like you've got this plan, you put it in action, and then hurricane hits.
Yep. It honestly took a few months for everything to sink in. I think I was responding as I would as an officer, where it was just taking action, boom, boom, boom. You know, I had to get back to work and just find a way to make everything work. So it took probably 2 months before everything just hit me. And when it did, I couldn't breathe. And just the magnitude of the loss and the chaos and the uncertainty, it was just a very uncertain time because we had this deadline of a baby being due very, very soon. And so I was really struggling emotionally with all that. The job honestly wasn't going very well, which didn't help things. And my husband, Caleb, reminded me that whenever he would be gone and I painted, it always made me feel better. And I was like, well, like, I did have the presence of mind to keep all the paint separate whenever, you know, a lot of my studio flooded, but the paint was fine. So I actually pulled it out and we're living upstairs. So our house is 2-story and the bottom story flooded. We were able to live up there still, but it was a toddler. I'm working from home. The things that didn't get wet are all upstairs. The toddler's moving, you know, as toddlers do, like every little thing has a different place at the end of the day. Like I can't keep up with it. There's clutter everywhere. Working from home, just, it was almost an identity crisis, but I kind of dug out my paints and set up my studio in the corner of our dining room and I started to paint. And it was the first time in months where all of a sudden my soul was at peace and I could like come back to center and I could pray and I could kind of receive God's peace in that way. And I felt good. And I actually like put the paint down and was like, oh my gosh, I feel like myself again. And I realized if I was painting in that moment, then I must truly be an artist and I can't deny this anymore. So I did it every night. And I actually got a call from someone a couple of weeks later who was opening a coffee shop and they wanted some art to have on the walls just for the opening. And, you know, we'll leave it up as long as we, until it takes to get a new artist in there. Do you want to do it? I said, sure. So throughout all of that, I mean, we're still living in chaos. They're still under construction. The job's still really, really struggling. I'm really struggling with. It was in sales. I'm not that good at sales. But I actually hung a show the day I went into labor.
Oh, my God. I didn't know this story.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the timeline. It was about 30 weeks, start to finish. But I guess that's what did it. When I realized that in that space that painting had a place, then I was like, well, I have to. And so when I had the baby, I ended up quitting my job and here we are.
Have you had any pushback or any, like, I guess what I'm thinking of is there's a pretty big cultural difference, I think, between being in the military and being an artist. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. So I would say at first when I was telling people what I was doing, I said I was staying home with my son because it was easier to explain that than I was painting and I could kind of hide behind that. But I actually joined Savvy Painter Growth Studio for anyone listening. And that was really helpful in moving past some of those early beliefs that were I was struggling with. So eventually I started calling myself an artist and finishing paintings and showing people. And little by little, they started to realize like, oh, she's serious. So, but the other, honestly, more than other people's opinions, it was more myself. And I had struggled with a few things. First being that art is valid and it is important. I can speak firsthand to what it's like to be around something with no beauty and no culture, because like a ship, there's no room, there's no time. There's no money, like you have a mission and it's honestly like starving. Like it's not, you can feel it in your soul. Like just going, whenever you pull into port and you smell these things and see colors and food that someone made, well, it's like, oh my gosh, it's a shock. And so I think remembering that and that this is important, even if it's not something as logical as being an engineer, being an officer, you know, being a nurse or a doctor who saves lives, I realized, no, it actually is really important to society. It elevates culture and it gets people thinking about things bigger than themselves. So that was one. And then the other huge hangup I had was that I did not go to art school. And I had this concern, this belief that I needed permission from everyone who had gone to art school before I could actually get my art out there.
That's a lot of people to get permission from, Kristen.
But it's true. Every time I talk to somebody, I didn't want to tell them. What if they find out? And what if they think I'm a fraud?
That topic is a big one. There are so many artists who come at this profession from so many different angles. And this need or this desire to feel validated is real, and yet it's very common. Let's put it that way. It's very common, and it feels so real that you need somebody else to tell you it's okay for you to live your life, which which when you think about it, it's kind of ridiculous, right? When you actually, it's one thing to have the feeling and just have that general idea, but it's another thing, like either when you write it out or you talk about it, that concept of, I need to get permission from everybody who's ever studied art for me to feel okay as an artist. And when you say it out loud like that, you kind of realize like, what?
Wait, what? Yeah. No, and I actually was even looking into going back to school for art during some of this period. But then honestly, it was like, well, I can't. Like, we can't really afford to pay for school and do this right now with all this stuff going on. And if that's really what's going to keep me from putting my art out there, then that's silly. So I'm just going to put my art out there and see what happens next. And hopefully one day I can, you know, get some more formal education. But if not, I mean, that's kind of a cool experiment too. Like, keep studying and keep trying to grow, and what happens, you know, maybe it'd be kind of cool to see what happens.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. So I'd love to hear you walk through for everybody, because it is such a big topic, how you transitioned from, I don't want to tell people what I do, I'm just going to tell them that I'm staying home with my kids because that's easy, to, I'm an artist and this is what I do, and you actually believing it, not just saying it.
That's a good question. I'll start with saying that confidence did need to be built with some kind of study. And I really rested on the education that I got painting with Paul. That was a huge confidence builder. I also read a lot. And anytime I find an artist that I really like, and if they have a book or if there's a recommendation, I think I've bought every book people have recommended on this podcast, I will buy it and read it. And so that was part of it, was starting to see that evidence in my own work. But that being said, there's this really necessary period where I had to tell all of those people to go away and close the door and actually get in the studio and do it. So I was a member of the Savvy Painter Growth Studio. I still am. It's wonderful. This is like a little pitch for the Growth Studio. And I actually had a mentorship session with you, Antrice, and you really helped me through this process. So what you did is encouraged me to slow down and quiet down and stop trying to do everything, which is something that I'm very guilty of, and just stick to one motif that was really catching my attention. And I think the quote was trace the thread, to do one painting, let that painting inform the next, write down the things that you're starting to notice, whether it be a brush stroke or a color, or it's actually very hard to write down. Some of those are almost intangible things. But I took your advice, and it took about 3 months of painting before I started to see things happening. And I tried a lot of things and made some bad paintings that were painted over or thrown away. And I started just to see certain marks wanting to come out, and certain color schemes that felt right, I guess. A lot of it was intuition. It was just like, yeah, this actually seems right. Ironically, I look back at work I had just done randomly because I wanted to, because I felt inspired like 4 years ago, and they like echoed those paintings, which was kind of cool. Like, that's where you had talked about the voice. I think that esoteric thing that every artist wants, and it's really there the whole time. So I realized, like, looking at those paintings that I'd done a while ago, went, wow, like it really was there the whole time. I just was overthinking it. Well, I mean, I don't know if I found it per se, but I think it's getting closer at the very least. So yeah, it took about 3 months to really start to see something happen. And then there was, in one sense, the perspective, the actual physical thing I was painting got really tight. I was looking at trees, and then all of a sudden I found myself like in this very particular perspective where I was at the base of a tree looking up, and that was like what felt the most comfortable. The paintings all of a sudden got bigger. I was getting frustrated painting smaller. So they went from 16 by 20 to 36 by 48, like overnight. And then all of a sudden that felt right. And certain colors started to repeat themselves in certain places. Certain brush marks started to repeat themselves. And it literally happened just all of a sudden, like all these experiments kind of came together, and I started seeing these marks happen. And I wasn't even in the room when they were happening. And that's when I kind of realized what you're talking about. I kind of went through a couple of weeks where I really enjoyed that flow and made a whole group of paintings within a very short time frame because it was all starting to happen very quickly.
That is awesome. I love it. It's so exciting. And it was so exciting to watch you go through this because it's just like you took off like a rocket. It was like this slow burn, like a slow start. And then as you quieted the other voices and your own voice grew stronger, you just like, which was so fun to watch. Oh my gosh, I can't even explain it. It was so cool. I was just like, and try not to get too excited to like, because I didn't want to freak you out, but I was just like, oh my God, this is the best.
At one point, I remember the painting where it really happened, and it was one that I had sketched out, and I really wasn't excited about it. It was more just like, I kind of want to try it. And then I was actually at like church one morning, and like through the sermon, I was like, painting in my head. And then I got home from church and I was like, Caleb, you make the baklava. I need to paint. And he's like, I don't know how to make baklava. It's easy. You'll get it. I need to paint. And that poor kid made the baklava. And that's still my favorite painting in this entire series. And the baklava was great. He puts up with my shit. It's great. I appreciate him so much. Everyone needs to learn how to make baklava anyway. So
yeah, exactly. On the fly. Get in the kitchen, go make baklava. Baklava, not even go make dessert. Baklava.
You'll figure it out. He did.
I know you have not one, but two shows happening right about now. Talk about those. And I've got to say, like, when I say that Kristen took off like a rocket, I can't even believe how much painting she got done as soon as that fire got lit in a relatively short amount of time. Talk about that.
Sure. So, on a very practical note, my son was a terrible sleeper, and then we got a sleep therapist, and all of a sudden he started taking 2-hour naps. And so that helped. I would literally, as soon as he went down, I'd go paint. And then when he'd wake up, I'd keep painting for 20 minutes, then I'd go get him, and then I wouldn't wash my brushes. And so I kind of was able to keep just go in and out as he napped. So on a very practical note, that's how I did it. And thank you to that sleep therapist. She was wonderful. Give her name to anyone who needs one. She does work remotely.
And so, wait, just to put it into context for people too, Bodhi is 18 months. Like, he's not, he's baby.
He'll be a year old next week. Yeah, he was 6 months old during a lot of this.
Yeah, so baby and a toddler. That's what we're looking at.
And the toddler, we actually did have her still in school since that was something that was good for her whenever I was in, we're still working full time. So that, again, practical way I could do if she was home. She's awesome though. I love her. Her name is Eleanor. So I also am very goal oriented. I'm sure that's a shocker. I'd actually secured a show at a local space that I really loved before Bodhi was born. So we were still in the flood mess and I had still working. And so they just had a really long wait list. And so I knew, I'm like, that might be perfect. That's about a year out. Like, let's do it. So that was really what I was working towards whenever I connected with you through Growth Studio. And then also around the time, so I hung that coffee shop little thing whenever my baby was born, but he was late. So on my due date, I actually signed a contract with a local gallery through some art that was hanging in there. I got a call for a second show and they wanted to do it before the one that I had planned. And so at this point, it was around the January timeframe where I was painting like a maniac. And I was like, well, I'm already doing it. Might as well. That sounds awesome. And so I agreed to a second one at virtually the same time. And so both venues were fine as long as they're two separate bodies of work. And so that's what I did. I made two separate bodies of work. And
so as this is happening, so Kristen, you were preparing. So you had a full year to prepare for the first show. And then you got invited to do a second show that's actually, confusingly, 1 month before the original show. Mm-hmm. And as you said, they were both fine with it as long as they were two separate bodies of work. I can hear the heads exploding, people listening to this going, what and how and what did you do? And oh my gosh. So you're already on a streak, so you're feeling pretty confident about your ability to produce. But still, you've got a family at home, and you've already got another show that you're committed, and now you've got to figure out how to make two separate shows. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. So I actually, you had sent out a little tip for hanging a show PDF in your email list a couple of years ago, and I had that, and you recommended using Adobe Illustrator to put in the dimensions of the walls and make sure you had enough art and make sure you're filling the walls well. And so I kind of used that as a way to step back. And as I finished paintings, I would just plug them into the board on Illustrator and kind of watch the show populate. And from there, I could kind of tell, like, okay, it's missing something here. And I would move things around. I probably like rehung it on the program 20 times before I was finally happy with it. That was how I was able to visually see it. And I just would paint, and I would try to paint probably 2 to 3 paintings at a time, any more than that, and I would just get overwhelmed at how many things I had not finished. And so I realized through this flow, if I worked in like 2 to 3 at a time, I would get a nice little grouping where the colors were very homogenous and they worked together. And I would try to kind of design them almost to work together. And so that helped the work to start to be more cohesive. And honestly, I just painted. There was a very manic month where I painted every second I could. And once I got to a point where at least the walls were full, you know, on my little Illustrator board, I could kind of relax and take a step back. But then since then, I've probably painted 10 or 15 more that I've been able to kind of swap out or use or not use. So it was nice to have some options, but getting to a point where at least I had the walls filled, even if it wasn't everything, was huge.
Mm-hmm. Massive. Yeah, I love it. I love like that you use the strategy and that it gave you sort of like a template and a little bit of peace of mind of like, okay, I've got this, and it's not this ephemeral thing that is like this really vague thing looming over me of, oh my gosh, I've got 2 shows. So you've had your first opening. Yes.
Yes, I did. It was so fun. There are bagpipes.
There's bagpipes.
Yeah, they did it in conjunction with like a concert. And I didn't know, but the bagpipes actually like went outside the door. And like, so you could hear it inside, which was really fun. I think you either love them or you hate them. I personally love bagpipes.
So how are you letting people know about this show? What is your plan for bringing people in and marketing this?
I mean, I've talked about it on Facebook and Instagram, and I have a very small email list, so I emailed them. But honestly, I have these little cards. I can show you. I have these little cards, and I keep them in my purse. And anytime I talk to somebody, I give it to them. And I've had a few people come as a result. That's really how it is. And it kind of gets to you because you get a connection, and I tell them I'm an artist and I have a show. And
how does that feel?
It feels really good. It feels really good. I've been a lot of things in my life, and this one feels the best.
And real quickly, also, since we're talking about your shows, where are they? Where are you? Where are the shows in case people want to swing by and see it?
I'm located in Jacksonville, Florida, in the United States. And the show hanging currently is at the St. John's Cathedral, which is downtown. And it's up until May 25th. And then the second one starts on May 31st at the Jewish Community Alliance in Jacksonville, Florida. And it goes for another month.
So it goes until the end of June, is that correct?
End of June, yeah. June 25th is the last day.
Okay. And we're in 2019 for people who listen to this later, just to make sure. I actually want to know from you, because you've listened to the podcast for so long. So you said 2014, which is basically when it started. So Kristen's been with the podcast from the beginning, which, oh my gosh, that's amazing. So this will be an interesting question. As somebody who's been listening to the podcast for as long as you have, what are some of the things that you have heard on the podcast that were really helpful to you, that you implemented, that you feel like you can now give back to other people who are sort of in your place where you were 4 years ago?
That is such a good question. I'm almost afraid to leave somebody out because so many people have influenced me in a very broad sense. Sort of what I mentioned earlier about how I just connected more with artists and with what they were saying. And I found a lot of understanding in what they would say and how they responded to things. A good example of this would be one of my Navy schools. We had to take the Myers-Briggs test, and they plotted the results on like a chart, like, so you could visually see the distribution of people in the class. And they come out, and it was like the entire class, I guess, were like concentrated in the four corners. And this was an engineering group. And then there was like this dot in the middle. And I did not even need them to tell me whose it was. It was mine. And I didn't even need them to say whose it was. I already knew it was me. And so it was just so interesting hearing all the people share their stories and for once not feeling like the odd duck in the room. I will say there were some specific artists, though, that really impacted me. Cameron Schmitz was one that I listened to early on. And I just appreciated how down to earth she was and a similar life stage as to what I knew I'd be. I didn't have kids yet, but I knew I wanted them. So just hearing her manage all of that and find so much joy in her art. We've actually connected on Instagram since, and it's been awesome. I will say I really appreciated Erin Spencer's as well, just to hear her background as being self-taught. But that being said, it was more just hearing people's journeys and hearing the ones that had to take time away, like I was having to, you know, and or their path wasn't quite as straightforward, just like mine, or just really just appreciating the journey. And I mean, art's a practice, and it's like yoga. I mean, it's something that you do every day, and that it's almost a spiritual thing. And just hearing so many people talk about that just made it feel so good to me, or even practically giving insight on when life takes you different directions. It was just inspiring to hear that they were normal people and they just had this thing. And or even now that I've been on this journey with a little bit more intent in the past couple of months, that the things that I might be feeling in the studio are normal.
So you were learning that from the stories that you heard about other artists when life happens, that that's something that's completely normal and that you can, that there's nothing wrong with you because you have a life.
Yeah. And even hearing painters take time off. Like I said, I had stopped listening to the podcast for a little bit because I wasn't able to paint. It hurt too much to listen to it. And even that was okay though. And it's like, that's life. It happens. And the important thing is that you come back and you don't stop.
What advice would you give to another artist who is sort of in that place of, I'm not sure how to even start with this or if this is my path? I know it's my path, but I'm afraid to take it.
On a very practical note, look before you leap. Just, you know, I think having too much pressure on the studio to satisfy basic needs, I don't think is a great thing. And so I've loved what you've said about using your day job as a patron and seeing it like that and really finding freedom there and taking what you have. But it definitely will take, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious just from all the interviews you've done, art is a huge part of life. And so I know for me, it meant sacrificing a social life, which I didn't really have a hard time with. But, you know, you have to paint in order to get better at painting. And so at some point, that's going to take away from something else. And whatever you're willing to give will be great. I mean, obviously, if responsibilities ebb and flow and you may not be able to do everything you can, but even just a little bit, even if it's just a small sketch a couple of times a week, if that's what you can do, then that's to be celebrated. There was someone who used to say, if you put on your running shoes and walk out the front door, it counts as a workout. And it doesn't have to be 2-hour runs. Like, you can just walk out the front door and just celebrate those little victories. If it's just walking and looking at a sketchbook or looking at a book. I mean, there are plenty of times where when I was at sea, I couldn't do anything, but I would just look at artists online if the internet was good enough. I actually just like found Carol Marine organically. I was looking for marine painters, like art, like, you know, boats.
Oh, that's funny.
And she popped up and I loved it. And honestly, I would watch her videos, and this was 5-6 years ago, and it was great. So, I mean, there's always ways to keep art in your life, even if it's not full blown oil painting in your studio with a northern light window. Like, you can do it with anything.
I love it. Anything else you want to say that I didn't ask you?
Thank you so much for this labor of love. It's made a difference to me.
Absolutely. Kristen, thank you so much for talking with us and sharing your story. And I'm so excited to be able to introduce you to people. And if you're in Jacksonville, go see Kristen's show. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so wonderful.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Savvy Painter Podcast with Kristen Kronick. As always, you can find show notes for this episode on savvypainter.com. You'll find examples of her tree paintings there, along with links to her shows in Jacksonville and how you can connect with Kristen. So Kristen mentioned an episode that I did a while back that detailed how to put together a show, and she talked about how helpful that was to her. That made me think that it would be fun to do a webinar to show you the exact process I use to make sure that my shows are stress-free. So if that's something that you are interested in, just go to savvypainter.com/webinars and you can register there. I'll be teaching it live so you can ask questions and download the handouts that Kristen and I talked about. So I'm going to be hosting that on Saturday, May 25th. Again, head on over to savvypainter.com/webinars if you want to participate.
So until the next time, this is Antrese Wood with the Savvy Painter Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.